You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We're on AM 1510, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. And Paul just gave me another one, too. We're on WMIE 91.5.
Well, you're not on there.
But we're not on that one. That's commercial free or something.
That's just a free bookmark.
It's just a free bookmark. But anyways... That's good. Hey, the word free. Oh, my God. I don't even want to talk about it. I get in so much trouble with people when I say that word sometimes. They think everybody wants everything for free. We don't. Right. Just saying.
So I want to let everybody know that if you want to join in on the conversation today, go to CETA Media Inc. on Facebook and type in your question. We'll be happy to answer that right on air for you.
And we have an action-packed show pack today. Said it twice. That's okay. Ellen, we missed you last week.
Yeah, I was in New York.
Did you have a good time?
Yeah, I had a conference up there that I was teaching, so it worked out very well. I got to see a play, and I went to a Mets game, the poor Mets. Oh, but I did get on the Jumbotron twice.
Oh.
Because I was, I really don't, to watch baseball is not really my favorite thing, so I danced. And apparently when you dance, you get on the Jumbotron. That's what I did.
Well, we had a really good show last week. We had Sherry Johnson that called in, and she called in to speak about having to marry the man that impregnated her at the age of 9. Yeah. She gave birth at 10, and she was forced to marry the monster, whatever you want to call him, at the age of 11. Mm-hmm. And so I found her through CNN. I saw her on CNN, and I reached out to her, and she said she would call in. And she's been on MSNBC. She's also speaking nationally. And today she's actually on the Tamron Hall show. She sent me a little message this morning to tune in that she was on her show. And she made all of us think twice about what's happening with in the state of Florida and so many states that people, grown men, are allowed to marry these children under the age of 17. And so she went to Florida and in Tallahassee, and she was able to have the laws changed single-handedly so that in the state of Florida, children younger than 17 will not have to marry somebody that age.
Yeah, and, it was a great show.
It was. And what was wonderful about that show is, how we always talk about staying engaged and involved in your community, and if there's a certain issue that's pressing on your mind and you feel you can make a difference, that you can make a difference. She empowered and motivated all of us here and on the airwaves. We had so many people that sent me texts and messages and stuff that even though the first time around, her bill went into committee and it did not come out, it passed in the House and not the Senate, she was able to go back the second time around and have it passed. So there is an actual law in the state of Florida because of Sherry Johnson that says young children ages of 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 cannot marry someone of older than them, or just they can't marry, period. She changed the laws.
That's awesome.
Which is pretty good.
And it was a great show, by the way. So a lot of great information in that show, so make sure that you listen to it. I do have a couple of PSAs that I probably get those out of the way real quick. The Space Coast Pride events are going on this week, 2019. So it starts tonight at the Galaxy Skateway. They have a skate at 7 p.m., then financial education Q&A night at Jotkoff Associates at West Melbourne, Florida at 6 p.m. That's on the 25th. There's a social event at Intercoastal Brewery in Melbourne at 6 p.m. on the 26th. And then on Friday night, there's a rainbow run and a block party on the 27th. That's going to be at O'Galley Civic Center. And then on the 28th is the Pride Festival and Parade. That's at the O'Galley Civic Center as well. And I would like to point out, too, the place where we met at ABWA, they are going to have a meeting. It looks like it's a dinner meeting.
Tomorrow night.
It's tomorrow night. And guess who is speaking, or is that one of the panel moderators, is our very own Sita Begee. And it's all about treating others with dignity. So if
right
you
up
are,
my alley.
That's right. If you are a member, the dinner is $30. Any guest would be $35. And wine and mixed drinks are available with dinner. So if you'd like to go and check out, ABWA is a fantastic organization. As we said before, we always say on the show that we've met there. And so you made a lot of great people, a lot of networking, a lot of opportunity.
Yeah, it's,
and of course, it's going to be a great topic, treating right. others with dignity.
We need that right now.
We do.
Our world needs, we need a more kind, gentle,
we need to bring back some John Lennon
mindful
songs.
World, actually. We need people to actually understand that we're all on this journey, a human journey on this earth. We're just passing through. We're like the light, right? Because there's so much hate and there's so much mistrust and people are not doing their best. As human beings, I think they're not.
I mean, I was thinking the other night too.
It's amazing.
What are the history books going to say about our generation?
Yeah,
you know, when you look forward, what are the history books going to say?
Well, you don't know
scary.
Until you try. You got to try.
That's
right.
And we all have to try.
Right.
That's what today's show is all about.
I know.
Unscripted.
I'm really excited.
Educational. This is going
to
be good.
I'm really excited to have Matt Price. Welcome to the show again.
Thank you. Welcome back,
my good friend, and thank you for being a sponsor and allowing us to advertise for Space Coast Pride as well on this segment. And then we have Sherry Daly, which is like Daly's College in Chicago. It's so easy to remember. Thank you for coming. And all nurses today. Thank you.
Yeah, awesome.
And then we have
Julie Griffin.
Julie Griffin. Julie Blake Griffin. It's a Blake first, right?
Yeah.
I was trying to remember if it's Julie Griffin Blake.
That was my maiden name, yes.
Okay, so Julie Blake Griffin is here. And Julie, your story is compelling. What you have done for all of us nurses, you have spoken up. You kind of taken the hit for it. And I'm sorry in a way, but in a way, I'm glad that you're speaking out. Thank you.
I am more than happy to speak up because I feel the pain of other nurses. And they're reaching out to me, too. And I just think that somebody needs to. We need to stand up and together. Make it known what nurses are going through right now. Often at the bedside, we are asked to remain silent, not to allow the patient to know what kind of conditions we are working in, because it's all about keeping them happy. And the little they know, the less they know about what's really going on, according to the administration, the better.
Yeah. So Matt, since the last time you were on the show, we spoke a lot about what patients should expect when they're going to be admitted. We spoke about staffing and the ratio per nurse per patient. What have you been doing since the last show? And I know you're involved in so much stuff to help people in the United States right here in Brevard, nurses, patients. You're involved in doing so much to bring awareness to what happens in hospitals and with staffing. So tell our listeners a little bit about what Matt Price is doing.
Well, I'm doing a lot of the same things. I try to represent our nurses in our facility on a regular basis of anything that they need. Also to educate about the importance of them documenting when things are unsafe and speaking up to the chain of command so that we can change those things right away and try to fix them, and then to let me know so that I can get involved and that we can make sure that those things are properly documented and continue to put pressure for change to happen so that our patients get better care at the end of the day and we can walk out of that place that we're working and know that the right thing was done for the patient. And so, you know, I spend a lot of time with emailing human resources and directors and following up with them, making sure that we're addressing staffing shortages and other issues regarding that. And then collecting a lot of information as well. I work on the OPEIU Nurses Council, which represents nurses throughout the country and things that are going on in their area. And we talk about standards of care. And so I bring those standards back to our community so that we can improve what we're doing. And hopefully you will feel that change when you come in, that you'll know that there's a higher standard
Yeah, it's all about safety, you know, and showing appreciation for what we do and for our patients. And so, and Sherry, you're here too. You added so much into our conversation the last time you were here as well. So tell us, why do you think there's, you know, nurses are so afraid to speak up?
Well, mostly a lot of it is retaliation. They're afraid to lose their job. They're afraid to lose their health care themselves. So if they speak up, they're afraid that they're going to lose those things. So they have to weigh whether, to them, is it worth it for them? Are they going to have enough people in their corner? That's why it's so important to have things like unions in your hospitals, supporting your nurses. It's great to have coworkers to find who also can help you get through that process and know that if you're going to speak up, you have someone to have your back and to prevent you from being, you know, fired from your job and losing your health care and your pay. And at the same time, your dignity, because when you're speaking up for yourself and your patients and you're told, no, that's not right, I mean, who wants to go through that?
Right. And you know what's, you know, like, we all have had friends that in private were talking about something that we say, okay, at the next meeting, I'm going to bring it up. So, Julie, why do you think at the next meeting they don't bring it up?
Because they're afraid of being retaliated against. I can tell you firsthand, the minute that I spoke up, it started, the retaliation started. I was bullied. I was singled out. I was, my shifts, they started putting me on every weekend. Little things that bothered you, they were doing. I actually, it was a new director that was in charge of the unit, and he was purposely trying to agitate me. And he admitted that to another coworker, that he was trying to get me to
quit.
To react. Mm-hmm. So he wanted me to raise my voice and
Setting you up. Yeah. He was setting you up to fail and to fall, so that if you do anything, they could write you up.
And exactly, that's exactly right. So I contacted, you know, HR, and then when HR was not listening, I went further. I called the ethics hotline. It is a national company. They own, I think they're the second largest owner of hospitals in the United States. They actually have some in England too, I believe. So I called their corporate hotline. And
which hospital were you working for? Was it West Side?
It was West Side. It was, it's in Plantation.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of nurses there, they encouraged me to speak out. They would come to me and they would tell me, oh, we know you're doing the right thing, but you know you could possibly be fired. And I it just came to the point where, but this is a person laying in the bed. It's a human being.
Because your story, it tells at the monitor you could only see two patients. But then they gave you a third?
Right. So the way that works, you have a slave monitor in the central nursing unit station. But each monitor in the room, you could see two patients at the same time. You could see both their vital signs at the same time. But then if you had a third patient, you couldn't monitor what was going on. And I know a lot of people say, well, you're not supposed to monitor the monitor. You're supposed to monitor the patient. And that's true, but these electronics, they give us a little bit of insight to where we can catch things earlier. So if you could just have that 30 seconds or 60 seconds and see what's going on with the patient, that may save a life.
That's right. I see Sherry's nodding her head as well. So you understand what she's saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We have the same thing happen right now, too, with when nurses in critical care or in another area get a third patient, they can't monitor them. And many times the hospitals and facilities are removing the monitor tech or the unit secretary that used to watch the monitor. They're removing them for cost savings, and so now there's not that person even watching the monitor of that third patient. So it's like it makes you wonder what you're paying for when you're going to ICU. I thought you were paying for monitoring, but I'm not so sure that you're totally being monitored all the time.
And that's a disservice to the patient. So you have two patients on a monitor and a third person that's not getting the benefit for that preemptive strike where you can catch something in time? Now, is that really fair for that patient? And is it fair for that nurse to put her behind the eight ball when she's trying to take care of these patients as best she can?
Right. And so Julie, were other nurses as bothered by it enough to speak out as well? Or you just had to be the one to speak out?
No, they were definitely bothered about it. But for whatever their reasons were, they were afraid to speak out. A couple nurses there were close to retirement, you know, so they didn't want to lose their retirement benefits. Some of the nurses were just 2 years into their career, so they needed the experience. For whatever reason, you could have kids at home, you could be the main breadwinner, you could be a single parent. There was different reasons for different people. My situation, my kids were grown. I was only in charge of myself and my two cats and my dog. So I said, you know what? I'm going to do the right thing. I thought what they were doing was, I still believe it is illegal. I believe that they are violating the federal code of register, the federal code. There's a specific code, 413.53, and it actually talks about the definition of what a intensive care unit is. And so when I started looking and I saw them defined what an intensive care was, I was like, for sure, they are breaking the law. This is Medicare fraud. So I thought, I didn't think I was going to be fired. I thought they would take it seriously.
And do something about it.
Right. I mean, what they were doing was illegal. I believe what happened a long time ago in the medical profession, we used to have bill per service. So let's say that you were getting a central line, they could bill for that specific service. Or let's say you got a Tylenol, they could bill for that service. And then over time, CMS, the Center, Medicare and Medicaid, they came up and they're like, gosh, we got to do something to contain costs. People are staying in these hospitals forever and we're just losing money. Let's encourage the hospitals and let's reimburse per diagnosis. So then they started getting them in quicker, getting them out quicker, and then sending them out to the rehabs sicker because they, unfortunately, they were not better. I mean, they might have been better, but they weren't completely.
They weren't optimal for transfer.
Yes, right. Yes, right. And now it's the pendulum is swinging the other way,
right?
Because they're telling the nursing facilities you can't send the patient back to the hospital for the same diagnosis.
Right.
You
mm-hmm.
have to try to take care of them at the nursing home or the skilled rehab center before you send them to a hospital.
Exactly.
But it's really about the bottom line all the
Medicare
time.
Medicare won't pay.
Right.
Yeah.
But
you're only getting so many days.
Yes.
So unsafe.
But unfortunately, I mean, I'm not sure if it's unfortunately or fortunately, that code still is on the books, and it talks about the definition of an intensive care unit, and it states in there, one nurse for two patients. And so if we are still giving these nurses three patients, that's Medicare fraud. You can't go back. I mean,
here's
the book.
A question. I have a lot of friends who work ICU, and that's what they're saying. They're saying that they're asking the nurses to take on a third or a fourth patient mm-hmm. in some cases. Mm-hmm. And nurses are quitting the profession mm-hmm. because they're afraid of putting their license on the line. They're afraid of watching patients die. So what do you think? I'm going to ask Sherry, what do you think is the answer? How do we fix this so that we don't have nurse burnout the way we do and we don't have nurses who are so scared to speak up?
Well, first, nurses have to be an advocate for nurses. You know, you have to stop eating our young. We have to promote safe staffing. We have to promote a safe place and whistleblower laws to protect nurses who report things. Those things are very effective. You know, you as a nurse who's been around for a while, a long time, it's always good to take people under your wing and be a leader by example. Speak up. Say something. Show them there's a way to do something and get it done. And at the same time, trying to work within the system. Sometimes you can't, but you can lead by example in that way.
Right. And Matt, so how do we fix it so that we're all watching what's happening with healthcare. And it's almost like healthcare is going to be the deciding factor for so many people when they cast a vote next year in the elections as well, whether it's universal healthcare or the public option or whatever. How do we reach those in administration that make such major decisions for hospitals and nursing homes and patients' lives that it's not always about the profit?
I think probably what I've seen has been the most effective. I mean, there's many different models that have been tried throughout the country. There's patient staffing committees and acuity-based models determining, you know, they give you a number based on what care is done for the patient. And then that determines the staffing for the day. And, you know, all those various models at the end of the day can be manipulated in different ways. And so ultimately the one thing that seems to be working the best is setting a minimum staffing ratio, a nurse to patient ratio. And then when facilities do not uphold that ratio, they are fined for it. And so when that nurse is given that third patient, they're going to be fined. If that
so hit
patient
them in the pocket
should be
book.
Getting, yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. So money talks, and that's probably what is going to be required at the end of the day, which I think is a sad state of affairs. It kind of tells where people are in this country, you know, where their heart is at. Instead of just doing the right thing ethically, they go after that dollar, and that greed is controlling our corporations right now. But also being said, you know, there's a lot of things, a lot of patients that we don't get revenue from. And so the corporations are trying to maximize the revenue that the ones that they can get money from with the insurance, and then pay for people that they don't get revenue for. And so that is probably the other thing that will have the greatest effect on the number of places that are able to stay open and provide access to care, is what type of insurance everyone has in the country. If we have 40% of our population uninsured, or even 20% of our population uninsured, it has an effect on the level of care that everyone receives in facilities. It's not just about you having your care because you have insurance. It's about all of us having a higher level of care. And we can't
stress that enough, right? Because right. so many people who are talking about healthcare reform or universal healthcare or private insurance versus Medicare for All or Medicaid, they don't understand. So expand on that a little bit. Maybe, Julie, you want to expand on that?
Well, I was just going to say, that's why that federal code 413.53 was adopted, because they didn't want Medicare to have to pay for the bills of everybody. So they specifically said, if we're going to reimburse you for these things, this is what we expect in return. So they defined what the critical care units were going to be. And also, I wanted to say that in the state of Florida, a lot of people don't realize or may not be aware, we did tort reform, I think it was back in 2007, I think somewhere. Physicians were lobbying because they were paying so much in insurance malpractice. So the government passed laws, and they put in there how much a hospital could be held accountable for. And in the state of Florida, if you happen to suffer, let's say your leg was cut off, it's a cap there, $500,000. That's what the cap is. And a lot of people don't know this. And if your husband or wife dies, it's $1 million. Now, I'm not saying that every case should be $500,000 when you suffer malpractice, but good God, there's got to be cases that I would expect, if you cut my leg off, the wrong leg, that's, to me, there's no amount of money. And
that's
the state
right.
of Florida says, nope, only $500,000.
Well, it limits the rights of the patient and their families,
right?
And not a one-size-fits-all cap for money.
Right, and so at the top of this big corporation, these healthcare corporations, they have bean counters, mm-hmm. and the bean counters, they
put a price on
risk,
human
and
life.
And risk consultants that actually take right. numbers and calculate right. how many times a yeah. risk is going to happen, mm-hmm. a certain event will happen to right. patients, yeah. and then they make a decision to make cuts and allow those right. risks to happen to that.
So getting ready for today's show, I actually read an article put out in August of 2019 from the DPE, which is Department of Professional Employees, and it's the website is DPEAFLCIO.org. But it talks about specifically about the fact that the increase, obviously, of how many people, that how much nursing you're going to need in the next, 2026, actually, 4,000 or 438,000 new nursing jobs.
Yeah,
are
we don't have enough as it is right now.
And the majority of the available research, this is a direct quote from the article, shows that safe staffing practices are cost effective to hospitals.
Right.
The high turnover rates and the over-relevance on temporary nursing staffing increase the number of average cost per discharge, which is the cost of inpatient care, including administration, and the overall operating costs. So safe staffing policies improve nurse performance and patient mortality rates and reduce turnover rates, staffing costs, and liability. So if all of the research points to that, it's like, what's the fight about?
You would
right?
think so, yeah. but in
you
the state of Florida,
exactly.
it's different.
That's why
because,
you're going to Tallahassee.
Right. it's different in the state of Florida because the bean counters they've calculated all these nurses and these positions. It costs $80,000 per nurse to hire, train, and retain a nurse. And that's not talking about their salary. That's just talking about what it costs to...
For turnover.
Right.
The cost to turnover.
Yes. So if you take those small, or not small, but if you take those lawsuits, $500,000 or $1 million, which is more beneficial to them
right.
money-wise?
Right.
They're going to get out cheaper if they do it the wrong way, not the safe staff.
Right.
They're
it's not, profits over
it's,
people.
It's yes. always putting profits
and
over
actually,
people.
And actually, they're
but
going
we have,
the opposite
we,
way.
We're
going
to have to take a quick station break, but I just want to remind all listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we're speaking with our good friend Matt Price is here. He's an RN here used to be Wustoff Hospital.
Yes.
I'm not going to say the next name. And we have Julie Blake Griffin. And Julie's story is so compelling. She is a nurse that decided to speak out against what she saw as wrongdoing in the ICU where she worked. And she was terminated, she was fired, which to all of us nurses, it speaks volumes that someone decided to speak out against the system, what we call the system, and she was fired for it, and we applaud you for it. We thank you. And we also have Sherry Daly, who is here in studio with us, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about if we ever saw patients that died because of unsafe staffing and poor staffing issues.
Absolutely. So we'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these quick messages from our sponsors.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Portions of Sita and Friends is brought to you by Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture Store inside the Merritt Square Mall at the Sears Wing. Save big on furniture working with a flexible family-owned store with all the brands you love, from Ashley, Serta, Coaster, and so and more. Brand new, warranties as well, and delivery and haulaway available at a fraction of the cost of most stores and delivered in 7 to 10 days. Free, no credit checking and financing, and free interior design. The owner, Scott Palmer, has been in the mattress and furniture business for over 30 years, and Cloud9 has been serving Central Florida for 7 years now. Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture Store, available at 321-459-2473. Again, call them 321-459-2473 or visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by and the number is easy to remember.
That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MEDFAST Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MEDFAST. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We're on AM 1510, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. As everyone knows, those of our friends who tune into the show every Monday, Ellen and I come here with Paul, and we have a very great conversation. We always try to keep our shows unscripted, very educational, and we give out some really valuable information to the public, whether it is about voting or opening a business, being an advocate. Today's case, we're talking about safe staffing in nursing homes and what we can do as human beings on this earthly journey to help each other so that when our time comes and we're laying in that hospital bed, we do have an advocate. We do have someone who is looking out for us and looking out for all the patients in a hospital or a nursing home. And so we brought in a friend, Matt Price, and he came with Sherry Daly, another nurse. And thank you, Julie, for driving all the way in from Boca Raton, is it?
Fort Lauderdale.
Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
So Julie Blake Griffin is here.
The furthest traveled.
Yes. And Julie worked for a hospital called Westside, and she was fired because she spoke out about the poor staffing and the challenges she faced in the ICU. So I have a question for you, Julie. So when you spoke out, what was the reaction you got from the other nurses and your unit manager and people in HR?
Well, the other nurses, I have to say, they were absolutely behind me. I still get messages from them. I'll get secret phone calls from them encouraging me to speak up, to keep going, don't settle. You know, I had one nurse call me in the middle of the night because her husband was a patient at the hospital and he wasn't receiving the care. And she worked there. She worked there, and yet she was calling me for help.
Yeah.
It weighs heavy on my heart. It yeah. weighs heavy on my heart. I took an oath when I became a nurse, and the patient is the first and the most important part of my job, and I just want to be their advocate. We're not supposed to cause harm as nurses. Most nurses don't want to. It's the challenges at the bedside that lead them to these instances, and they have to make a decision. My family, keep my job, keep my mouth shut. Yeah.
So, Sherry, why do you think certain nurses get labeled? Like, they'll say, oh, she complains a lot. I mean, they'll say, oh, to pay her no mind, she complains a lot. I guess it's almost like they write you off.
It's like squeaky wheel.
Yeah.
Gets the grease. It works for physicians. I don't know why it doesn't work for nurses.
So I think people don't want to be considered
a troublemaker, but if your heart and your mind are in the right place and you're looking out for your patients and your coworkers, the label for me really doesn't bother me because I sleep very well at night.
That could actually be applied to so many professions. I mean, I would think if a flight attendant spoke out about having been short-staffed on an aircraft, they'll say, "Oh, she complains a lot." Or I could say,
"No, they wouldn't let the plane take off."
Or if a pilot didn't get enough sleep, the plane can't take off. Mm-hmm. So I often want, or even teachers. You have the teachers' union who are fighting for, you know, their salaries and for class size and they'll speak to administrators.
Law? Isn't there a law in effect to how many students?
But it never works.
But they worked a way around it. If you follow the Florida, they found a way to work around it.
Why is it different when it comes to nurses? Because we're the one who are rendering the care at the bedside. We're the one who will have to take the physician orders. We have to know them. We have to make sure we're doing the right thing. And yet still, if we try to speak, and I know Matt could jump in here.
Yeah,
if we try to speak,
why are we bullied?
So why do you think?
Just like Julie talked about, the schedule started getting manipulated when she started speaking out because they could bully her with the schedule, which is a little bit more passive method of doing it, and yet it's going to totally affect your life. If you have to be home for your kids on certain days and now your schedule's being changed, that's going to quiet you because you know that you have to take care of your own kids before you come to work. And there's all sorts of ways that employers use little things to bully people that may not be as evident to other people around. But you ask in that department if that director is known for manipulating schedules, oh, they can tell you. The staff can tell you. Oh, yeah, she said or he said such and such, and then they were on every single weekend after that.
Manipulation seems to be, I mean, even with politicians, people tell you one thing when they're running for office and do something else once they get in, right?
Right.
So absolutely. I often wonder why people, you know, if you say you're going to do something,
just do it.
What's so difficult? I mean, if you speak to nurses who've stayed in a certain place, a certain hospital or an institution for years, and you say, well, how come you're here for 15 years or 20 years or whatever? And they'll say, they work with me.
Right.
I mean, if you really listen to the people who are happy at their jobs and they enjoy going to work every day, it's because someone in administration listened.
Took the time.
So what happened in your hospital that when you brought that subject up and you say, listen, we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing for the insurance companies, for the patients, for what we're getting paid for? Did they not listen?
No, I was labeled the troublemaker. I was called the weed that they needed to get rid of by the director. It's unfair, it's unfortunate, but it just, once they put their opinion on it, the nurses that are relying upon the director or whoever for their schedule, for their pay, for the promotion, they are going to say and do what the director wants to hear. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but they're doing it for their own reasons because they need to keep their job. I mean, their family is the most important to them.
It's all about
They try to isolate you from your coworkers because you are the bad one.
And you stand behind a policy.
Yeah.
Right.
I've known plenty of nurses that says, well, the policy says, why can't we venture out of the policy sometime, listen to the nurses, and maybe you have to change the policy.
We definitely need to change policies. So, I mean, when you start talking about staffing grids and things like that, and you see one thing we talked about earlier was call-outs. When you have a staffing grid and you know that morale is an all-time low and people are calling out, and you changed policy to make the call, the sick policy even more strict, what starts happening? It drives morale even worse because people try to call out sick to work and you're telling them they can't call out, or you write them up for calling out. So you're saying you want people to come to work healthy, but yet at the same time,
right,
you're expecting something totally different than what you're saying. And so you're telling the public that you don't want nurses to come to work sick, but yet you're telling the nurse, if you don't come to work, you're going to get fired or you're going to get
written up. But you don't really fire them or write them up.
Well,
sometimes they keep them.
Well,
that's true.
But they do actually. They do actually.
But the few people that take advantage of the system are not the majority.
Right.
So to focus on those few who take advantage of the system, that's a whole different.
I think it speaks.
But it does affect staffing, and we know that. We know that. But you know, illness happens to all of us, including people in healthcare. And
we're taking care of the sick, but yet we can't be sick.
Right, right.
We can be sick on our own time.
Well, you know what?
Nurses get sick too. Right.
It should be.
But you do have some that, you know, the ones who are going to drink on the weekend and call in on the Monday. You know those, right? But here's the thing. I think it speaks volumes about where we are as a nation and as a country about work ethics as well.
True.
Right? Because, I mean, I know for a fact when I go home to Trinidad and Tobago to visit, there are a lot of professions where you cannot pick up an extra shift.
Mm-hmm.
And my God, the U.S. dollar means so much. So if you have an opportunity to wear a badge, wear it with pride, and go to work and have people in administration listen to you with your concerns. And I know once when my husband worked for Wusthof, he said they were talking about something, and they said that the janitors sometimes can make great suggestions. It's all about listening to people.
Right.
What has happened to our profession in that a guy can come out of a college, a university with a bachelor's degree, make so much more money than the nurses, and makes decisions for us? What has happened that they don't listen? Matt, you can take
because
that.
It's corporate
you're fighting.
Driven, ultimately, there are decisions made very high up in corporations, and obviously their financial goals to be met. And so they come up with ways of what is the highest cost of the corporation. And when you look at the highest cost, it is nurses. It's the CNAs, the nurses, the LPNs. Their salaries are the highest cost to care for the patients within the facility. So that's many times.
But the nurses
first thing
are the
they
ones
after
that
to,
prevent
that
other
to cut.
Costs to the hospital.
Right.
Like patient staying longer, preventing the cubiti, catching pneumonia early.
The doctors see the patient for what, maybe 10 minutes when they're rounding in the hospital, and the nurse is the one that is there 24/7. We catch those things. We're the ones that will alert the physician.
Yeah, we're kind of holding the hospital when you think about
it.
Oh,
absolutely.
Not just that. I mean, it's a team.
We're the face.
It's a team.
Of the hospital.
It's teamwork. But at the same time, I hear what you're saying. You know, like they'll have, I know some hospitals will have the nurses. You have to feed, you have to bathe, you have to wash, you have to dress, groom. How about using some of that money and put more nursing assistants on the floor
Absolutely.
To help the nurse? Because then, guess what? You won't have the wound vac. You won't have to have
right.
a specialty bed. And we were talking
Isn't
about
it
diagnosis.
Funny, you look at
we know
the
missed
simple
care
things.
Happens
simple
and
things.
We don't
the
have enough
things.
Staff. The research already proves missed care happens. You know, you can go into the hospital yourself or when your family's there, ask them if they got a bath every day. Because if there's not enough CNAs and enough nurses, those things are going to get missed.
But
and
again,
it's
going
to lead to something else. It may lead to an infection. It may lead to inactivity.
I
Maybe
can tell you what it leads to.
The
people smell really bad.
But it goes right back.
I mean,
it
unfortunately,
goes
no. That you we've had patients in the past, and I've worked in Indiana, I've worked in Chicago, I've worked here in Florida. And I remember once we had a patient that was in the ICU that probably didn't get a bath. The patient had lice in the pubic area. I'm not joking. And I remember when we admitted that patient, and it was terrible. We had to give him put him in the bath right away, and the person told us they didn't get a bath.
And doesn't that break your heart?
It does break your heart. And we've had people who've developed infections in their certain areas under their breasts and stuff. that the nurses didn't have enough time to lift it up and do a proper body check. And I see Sherry shaking her head. Well, you know what
listen,
I'm talking about, girl.
You know, I've actually had to drive over 2 hours to start an IV for my father.
Yeah, when he was admitted.
When he was in a nursing home.
Isn't that awful that in today's world this has to happen?
And they know that I'm a nurse. And I would come in and my mother was there. Thankfully, he had an advocate who was there every night. Think about those patients who don't have a family member to be an advocate for them. How they are being left behind. Sitting in wheelchairs for hours, not being clean, not being properly cared for.
Nobody thinks about that. The last day on my job that I was there, because we have a lot of elderly people in the state of Florida, and their young family members are up north somewhere. They can still tolerate that cold, and the older people come here, and they retire. And my last day on the job, I had an elderly lady, and she was defecating on herself, like every half an hour, screaming, help me, help me, help me. And they just wanted me to close the door, not listen to that. They wanted me to take another patient. That was their priority right there. In the back of my mind, I'm thinking to myself, my God, that could be my mom. That could be my dad. That could be me.
It was my dad.
Yeah.
And he, as a military veteran, and in a nursing home that's getting money from the government to take care of a veteran. They actually lost their licensing to take care of veterans after my father passed away from a lot of issues, but it's a sad state when we don't take care of our elderly. It is a sad state when we ignore what's going on every day in these facilities, in our hospitals. We live together. Those who do know better do better is one of my favorite sayings. So we know better. We know how we should be treating each other. And it is not happening.
We need more conversations like this, too, in that we're not blaming anyone, but we want to fix it. We want to find a solution to it. So, Julie, after this happened to you, did you reach out to anyone in Tallahassee or even Washington, D.C.? Because I think we need to take this show on the road.
Of course. I've written to many elected officials. I rarely get responses. If they are, they're usually auto responses.
Yes.
But I have talked to a couple people, and I do have some meetings set up. I also developed a group, Nurses Take Florida. That's with the public and nurses working together to help educate everybody and let them know what's going on in the hospitals, because nurses don't want to keep silent about this. We just don't. We want it to be done the right way.
Well, I think because everyone is thinking that it could be one of us. And I know, Matt, you and I have talked about this extensively, about, you know, trying to have the legislation in place for safe staffing so that we could all, you know, we could sleep easy at night. I mean, what else can we do besides talk to someone in the hospital, talk with your fellow workers, talk with people in the community? You know, we have all these people running for office, and they say, oh, when we get to Tallahassee, we'll do this and that, but it does not happen.
No, it doesn't. In fact, most of the bills don't even make it out of committee because the hospital associations, insurances, other people are paying lobbyists to lobby against us.
The hospital associations.
And so
pharmaceutical companies.
Until the public rises up and says, you know, they're not going to tolerate those lobbyists controlling the legislation, we're going to continue having more of the same.
I mean, we could get rid of all the lobbyists and take that money and hire more nursing assistants to act. You know how they expect you to write, turn and reposition every 2 hours, heels floated, back rub, you know, you position the patient properly to eat. We can actually do all of that if we take all the money that we pay the lobbyists with and put nursing assistants in the hospitals who want to be a nursing assistant, right?
Yeah. And we know, you know, California is the only state right now that has a top-to-bottom legislation on ratios of nurse-to-patient ratios. And they have some of the lowest nursing turnover rates in the country. There are many patient outcomes that are improved. Their readmission rates are much lower in regards to pneumonia. the mortality rates are lower in surgical units. People that have had cardiac arrest in the hospital are more likely to survive in that setting where there's more nurses. So we know that adding the staff does work, and it has an effect on many things, not just the dollar at the end of the day that we discharge the patient sooner because they get better faster, but first of all, that the patient does get better.
I also want to say that even after it's a law, the public has to follow up and make sure that we are enforcing the law.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I live in Fort Lauderdale, right near the nursing home that lost the 12 people after the hurricane.
In Hollywood Hills? It's in Hollywood Hills?
Right.
Yeah. I worked there briefly, like 20-some years ago.
Well, I, you know what? I got to say, I don't know any of the people that work there or were injured, but the governor came across and he made the mandate about the generators. And I'm asking every Floridian to go and look and see how many skilled facilities are actually doing what was told, because I can tell you it's not half.
They're not.
Because they get waiver after waiver after waiver.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Even when this is law, we still need to make sure that
there's no
public
oversight.
Right.
That's the problem.
Right.
They make the laws and there's no one to check. But here's the thing, you know, as nurses, I know this is going to be a big thing next year. How about education as well before people get sick? We were talking about the diagnoses. What are some of the major diagnoses that they are reimbursed for? UTI, dehydration, pulmonary problems, heart attacks, right?
Yeah.
Strokes. Mm-hmm. So before people admit it, we also need to have the conversation about preventative care as well.
Right.
What are we doing when people are admitted? Like you were saying, they should be leaving better, right?
Well,
so do we have people in place for that?
And the nurse needs time to actually do that discharge teaching with them.
We
so
don't have that.
Don't.
You know
a
that.
Good,
that's
a good,
for sure.
A good admission and a good discharge are key.
And follow-up care.
Right.
Finding follow-up care.
Well, how many times you have the discharge paperwork in front of you and you write it out, see your family physician in 2 weeks, follow-up care, preventative care, but actually it's just a pen. You're checking these boxes off.
Right.
Have we gotten to such
they're
a state
protecting themselves
where we're
in
just
court.
Protecting the hospitals and the nursing facilities, and we're just checking a box knowing very well this is not going to be followed up on. Anybody could take that question.
Not just that. As a person who works in surgery, I can't tell you how many patients that come through and we ask about the medications they take. And I can't tell you how many have said, well, I haven't taken those in 2 weeks because I haven't been able to afford my medication.
That's a whole different show right there.
I mean, but preventative care would save this money so much, this country so much more money, because now we're not treating. I think to treat a stroke, a heart attack, because they've been on their medication for cholesterol, they've been followed by a doctor. These are all things, as a patient, to being your best self-advocate, but some can't afford it, unfortunately.
So what happens in the morning meeting? I would like to be a fly on the wall in one of these morning meetings in a hospital when they go through the admissions and the discharges and what's happening in the hospital. So what is it, Matt? Is it that certain diagnosis gets more money and certain level of care gets more money? I mean, here's a CEO of the company and all the managers and all the people who make the six figures, not the nurses, unfortunately, or the nurses' aides, and they're talking about what should be done on the floor, but it's not being done.
Yeah, we do know there's our maximum reimbursements underneath Medicare, and certain diagnoses automatically max those out. So facilities do make sure that they are getting that maximum reimbursement, and they pay some pay third party companies to come in and review charts to make sure that they get every dollar that is possible. And I don't fault them for that. I just fault them for not providing the staff
to get to that point.
That care
yes.
gets given. But certainly, yeah, they're going to look for that maximum reimbursement. And so there's certain bundles that will take a person there, or a certain diagnosis code or DRG will take them there. So,
and to make sure they give you the right code, because that prevents you from getting care if you're not getting the correct code attached to you, just actually going in being treated for something. I've seen people turned away for getting their blood work because the office didn't have the correct code.
Yeah, and the lab. Sometimes the lab won't even draw your blood if they don't have the right code. So, Julie, what do you think the answer is to all of this? Because healthcare has become a business. No doubt about it. I mean, you have people who open companies to shoot x-rays, draw blood, give you diabetic shoes, physical therapy, give you ancillary supplies for your waist and your foot and your toe and everything else, and they charge an arm and a leg.
You know,
what is the answer?
I am for free enterprise. I think we live in the best country there is, but we need to make sure to hold these corporations accountable for what we are buying as a consumer. We are buying good care. We're not living in a third world country, and they're making billions of dollars. Provide care like you are receiving billions of dollars. Nurses and the community, they need to be more educated on what's out there. They need to come together. They need to advocate for themselves. We need to work together to hold these corporations accountable, because if not, we're going to be the one on the losing end. Like the couple of nurses, I'm not going to state their case, but they were arrested in Hollywood. There was a nurse in Tennessee that was arrested because she gave the wrong medicine. I'm not defending either one of them or the actions, but we are on the verge of where we need to prove what we are doing. So you know what? We need the time to do what we're doing.
Right.
And we can't just rely on our employer to make sure we're doing the right job. So we need to come together as the community and as nurses. Follow nursestakeflorida.com. Get out there. We're having a rally in Fort Lauderdale on October 3rd. Anybody can join us. Make sure that the corporations are held accountable.
Right. And even like you're right about the medical errors. I mean, we could talk for 2-3 hours on this subject. I mean, I like what our company did, you know, for Coumadin insulin, taking something out of the Pyxis system, we do have to verify with another nurse. And I have to be honest, I feel so comforted when I have another nurse, when I have to, because after I heard about that nurse in Tennessee, I think it was, it scares the heck out of everyone. And it's nice to grab one of your coworkers and say, check this with me.
But you know what? She was put up for failure. I mean, she was set up for failure.
The time.
Didn't have all,
But I think computer, putting stuff in a computer has really helped, because we're not forced to make out what a physician has written.
Well, and a computer doesn't replace a staff member. That's the other thing. And ultimately, these safety systems work when they're up and running. But what happens when they're down? What happens
That's
when there's
right.
a transition? Mm-hmm.
And what if you don't have the generator?
Staff.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, those nurses, they actually did call 911 and they did try to, they went up their chain of command and they were given, we're working on it. And I just want to say the chief of police in Hollywood came out and he said, I don't care. They didn't do enough.
Yeah, the nurses, unfortunately,
so
there's two sides to that story. And I think when you look at the big picture, they did call. They did not get the assistance that they needed.
Right.
So, Matt, we have about 20 seconds left. Anything you want to give out, a website
the big
or
message
anything?
Today.
How someone could contact you,
well,
anybody?
Well, come join us for Nurses Take Florida. We'd love to see the public come out and join us for that event. And we'll be having another one coming up soon in Jacksonville, Florida, I believe, before the end of the year. So come out and support nurses and safe staffing in hospitals.
And we've got a lot of great stuff on the website as well as on our Facebook page. Make sure you check those things out. Another great edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We'll see you next Monday at 1 o'clock.